Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Welcome back to America This Week. This is Tim Reedy, joined as usual by Father Matt Malone. And we're speaking today with Rob Weinert-Kent, theater critic for America and also editor at American Theater Magazine. We've been talking about some of the current shows, adaptations to the screen. And we're just starting to get into a little discussion of, you know, why theater is important, some of the parallels with kind of liturgical experiences, was obviously something we're interested in. Rob, you wrote about this for us. I was just digging through our archives this morning back in 2001, kind of laying out maybe kind of your, the way you approach theater as a believer, but also a critic and somebody steeped in the history of theater. What are the, maybe you could talk more about the parallels there and why, you know, why it's still important to make theater a part of your life, you know, to kind of set aside the time to put down your screen and get in a room with other people to watch plays and musicals.
Well, yeah, I think that, that sums it up. It is one of the few places where we do shut off our phones and spend some time. Actually, I was interested. I just now thought of the interview with Martin Scorsese that was in the New York Times. I know you've also had interviewed, and I don't know if he said this to Father Jim Martin as well, but that he was a very stressed out, fast paced guy. He still is, Martin Scorsese.
Right. And he's a New Yorker. Yeah.
Church and films were the two things that sort of slowed him down to spend some time meditatively. And I do really think there's wonderful, I'm going to forget the critic's name, a canonical critic whose name I can't remember. Anyway, he who talked about theater as a place to think the long thought and to have, you know, some polemical playwrights talk about this as in terms of argument. You need to have a long, sustained, complicated argument. And I think Tony Kushner is great in that tradition where really there's rhetoric and the argument, and you can really process that in the theater together. But obviously, that's not all. Not all theater is about the about that kind of meaty content. Other times, it's just being transported in an experience, and that's what we're talking about with a lot of musicals. Although a lot of musicals can deal with pretty complicated and meaty content as well. But yeah, sitting in a space together with folks for that long, sometimes not comfortable chairs, and giving your attention, shared attention to one place and one dilemma, you know, that someone's going through. Even in a light material, it doesn't work without some sort of conflict or something to tug you in. I feel like if people give themselves over to that, and it's a fully conceived work, whether it's great or not, I feel like it could be a healing thing to do. There's a great story I love to. I remember reading Cameron Manheim in a book she wrote years ago. She was at Grapes of Wrath on Broadway. The Steppenwolf production went on for hours, and it was, I didn't see it unfortunately, but she said she was sitting next to a woman who was really cold, and Cameron Manheim is a large woman. She took up a lot of space in her seat, and this woman was upset about that, and she just seemed to be like not excited that she was sitting next to Cameron Manheim. She was very cold to her, pulled her purse up. At the end, by the end of the show, after the Jodes had been through this whole struggle together, she and everyone in the house basically eyes just streaming. And they just reached out and touched hands and just held hands. And I've had moments like that. In fact, I think at the Falsettos performance I was talking about, the woman next to me, I don't think we touched, but she, I wasn't with a friend. I was just with another person who'd come to see Andrew Rannells. I think that was why she was there. And I think we both sort of turned to each other and said, like, that was really a moment, you know? And not every theater experience is like that, but that's in microcosm the way that, you know, theater can move us all together. And it's not unlike what can happen in film, but I just feel like the fact that you're sharing the space with the actors and they're with you and the performance changes in the room.
It's funny, as you were talking, my first theater memory came back to me. I was I was 11 years old, and my father took me to Boston to the Schubert Theater to see Richard Kiley in Man of La Mancha. Right? And as the lights were coming down and that great ovation begins, my father leaned in and said to me, "Here we go." Right? And this began my adventure with the theater. Right? This is when I started to fall in love with the stage. But it's interesting that he said, "Here we go." Right? We are all now about to do this thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
What's interesting is it's the same show they did the night before, but it isn't.
Yeah.
There's never going to be, no one else but myself and my father and the people who were in that theater saw that show, right? Because
exactly.
The next time
exactly.
It's done, it's different. And yet it's the same. And it seems to me that there's the reason why a kind of theatrical imagination and a Catholic imagination can creatively coexist is because that's what the Eucharist is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same and different every time.
Right.
We're not just recreating something. We are creating something simultaneously.
Right. And it's a real presence there too,
yeah,
as well.
Right.
I think
exactly.
It's the important part. I've been swept away by films in a similar way, and even by television shows or on my little iPad or whatever. But it's different when they're on the stage with you. I think I wrote about Color Purple for this magazine as well. And it's pretty famous now, but Cynthia Erivo, who plays the Miss, I think Celia is the character's name, has this big number near the end of the show. I don't know if you get to see it. And I've never felt a connection in an audience like that. Like, I don't
really?
Think, I maybe I'd have to think hard to find a connection where she just, like, wrenches that emotion, that song out of, and it's constructed so that she doesn't really let loose until that moment, and
right.
You've been waiting for it. This character just has been through so much, and she wrenches herself out, and that everyone stood up. I mean, and it was a church experience. And then the show had to go on and do a few more songs, but there was nothing like that. Like that moment, and that wouldn't have happened in a movie theater,
right?
It's funny. I think when I saw La La Land, people, even though it wasn't a big house, they felt the need to clap at the end of the musical numbers,
yeah.
which is kind of great, kind of great. But Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling cannot hear you,
right? right, and that's an important part of the equation, isn't it? Because
yeah.
usually something, because you clap and then the show goes on, right?
Yeah.
But that clapping has become then becomes part of the show itself, right?
Oh yeah,
because they
yeah.
take that energy.
I don't know if you ever went on the other side of the footlights, but I did a little bit of. Acting at Brophy College Preparatory in Phoenix, and
yeah, I did too.
So I know, and I've talked to many performers who talk about that, good house, bad house, and
it's real
energy of the audience, and you can tell when the audience is listening. You just can tell, and we can tell when they're not. You can tell when the attention is wandered. You're not always perfectly right. It's always very subjective when you're on stage, but. Yeah.
And it's the same in the pulpit, too.
Yeah, sure.
I
imagine.
Yeah.
I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can just feel it, right?
Right. Exactly. You know when they're with you,
yeah.
and you know when they're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So
yeah.
These moments that you describe, which I'm sure everybody listening would love to be part of those, but are you kind of hunting for those moments? I imagine they don't happen at every show you go to.
No, but I would say that's sort of a great illustration of why you go. There's definitely a lot of time you spend in the theater where my mind is wandering to my grocery list or whatever, and I'm not thinking about that.
Like church, yeah.
Not unlike that. Not
there,
unlike
yeah.
that. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. The moment you talked about the I think every critic I know and every other theater goer I talk to, that moment when the lights go down right before the show starts is still... No matter what happens afterward, that's still
magic.
The most, isn't that? It's
yeah.
just so exciting. And is there an equivalent moment in the Mass? I don't know if there is. It sort of flows out of your into the.
That yeah, I mean that's interesting.
The Mass is not a show, so
I think it's probably the offertory. It's probably that moment, which is a bit like an overture.
Okay,
and it's that moment right after our intercessory prayers, and there's that moment of quiet.
Okay.
And now we are about to begin the great Eucharistic prayer of the Church, and it does often have that kind of moment.
When I think about it now, it's not the same, but having a moment of that many people being quiet
right.
and silent. Now, it's not always the case in a Broadway house right before the curtain goes down, but even that little buzz is great. But that many people, especially in a large space, or even if it's not a large space, a group of people all being quiet together.
Right.
That's pretty elemental.
Yes. Yeah. Doesn't happen in New York very often.
No.
Right.
It's true.
Right.
It's true.
I mean, I would say I think every priest should study acting. And precisely because the thing that they teach every actor, the first thing they teach you is that you're not pretending, right? That you're making something real.
Right.
Right. And and the audience will know if it isn't.
Right.
Right. And that's, to your point about the real presence, that's what a mass is.
It's
entering into a reality where heaven and earth come together.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know if it's Sanford Meisner or someone who said that
we're not like Civil War reenactors.
Right, no, but it's real behavior right. in imaginary circumstances is acting. It's like real, you have to really be there for whatever crazy stuff that plays about, or real stuff, whatever gnarly stuff it is, whatever the play requires, and you have to really bring yourself to it.
Right, and that's also true in preaching. Like if you're in the pulpit and you're preaching and you are not connected via your heart with a kind of lived experience of what you're talking about, the congregation will know it.
Yeah.
They will know it. Right? Yes. They'll still say, "Great homily, Father," but I mean, it's a great. There are a lot of, in a certain sense, it was familiar to be entering into that, and that I think you're right in this article that the theater really is like the closest thing we have to a kind of secular church.
I do think so, and I've talked to folks who are non-believers or believe different faiths who do really feel like that is a place they can gather, especially now in the theater, and that they feel that they get from it some of the things that we all get from church. And those of us who are believers get, you know, I don't say we get more, but we also get that, some of that. And as to your question whether I'm hunting for those moments, I mean those are the moments that you keep going back for, you know. I will admit that I don't go to as many shows as I used to, but when I was a serious jobbing critic, critics see a lot more plays than any human being should be subjected to. And, you know, it becomes like it's a job. And so you really look for those moments when you're doing it constantly, and you really, those moments really stand out.
Many of the listeners that we have on the show here may not, obviously don't, not, we're talking from New York when we have access to all this wonderful theater. What advice would you have then, maybe in closing, in terms of like, how do you take, you know, obviously whether it's regional theater or traveling to, you know, how can you take part in that experience?
Yeah. One thing I would say is that the subscription model that a lot of resident theaters around the country, regional theaters, have used has kind of fallen apart, you know, and people don't subscribe to things anymore. And I think that's okay, especially because I would just encourage people to look at find their local theater and pick something that looks interesting to them, because rather than feeling like this is obligation. One of the things I hate most is when I talk to people and I say, "Oh, you write about theater?" And they feel like, and they'll say this guilty look, "Oh, I should see more theater." It's like, no, I don't. It's not a guilty thing. This is an art form. You're either into it or not. But if you're interested, don't feel like it's this huge obligation you have to take on, or you have to learn a bunch of things or study things. It's accessible as any culture that you. Sometimes the price isn't as accessible, but a single ticket can be. And I think people, there's great theater all over the country, not just here in New York, worth looking at. Yeah.
Rob Ryden Kent is an arts writer based in New York. He's the editor of American Theater Magazine and a theater critic for America Magazine. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And thanks for your contribution to America.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by our chief correspondent, Kevin Clark. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We'll be right back after the news summary.
News.
Catholics make up around one-third of the House of Representatives and about a quarter of the Senate. That's according to new Pew Research statistics released last week, which found the religious makeup of the 115th Congress is significantly Christian at 91%. Overall, there are six fewer Christians in the new Congress, but there are four more Catholics, who now total 168.
Number 4.
The number of Catholic clergy and lay people who were killed while serving the church last year is at a 7-year high. That's according to new figures released by the Vatican's Information Service. As many as 28 pastoral workers died violently last year, an increase of 6 deaths since 2015. Meanwhile, the Center for Study of Global Christianity also released its annual report, finding that around 90,000 Christians were killed for their faith in 2016. It also found that Christians are now among the most persecuted religious group in the world.
Number 3.
In the wake of a deadly riot at a Brazilian jail, Pope Francis has called for all prisons to offer dignified living conditions. Speaking last week, the Pope called for prisons to be places of re-education, social reintegration, and true rehabilitation. It's a position that's been taken by the US bishops, who've called on senators and representatives to support policies that lift up human life, promote civility, community safety, and help reform people's lives.
Number 2.
The prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, Cardinal Gerard Muller, has said the Catholic Church is very far from a situation in which the Pope is in need of a fraternal correction because he's not put the faith and church teaching in danger. In an interview this week, Cardinal Muller said Pope Francis' document on the family, Amoris Laetitia, was very clear in its teaching in that it asks priests to help those living in irregular situations to find a path to new integration with the church in accordance with church teaching. The Cardinal was interviewed about a formal request to Pope Francis for clarification about Amoris Laetitia and particularly its call for the pastoral accompaniment of people who are divorced and civilly remarried or who are living together without marriage. The request was written in September by Cardinal Raymond Burke and 3 other cardinals.
Number 1.
A new report by the US bishops has said the church needs to work locally to root out racism and bring people together. The report, which comes in the wake of last year's violence and racial tensions, urges church leaders to focus on community forums, parish training for staff and parishioners, and support of the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. The group also recommends that the National Day of Prayer for Peace in Communities be an annual observance. Meanwhile, the US bishops are also urging Americans to look to their families for stories of immigration as the church observes National Migration Week. Cardinal Daniel DiNardo and Archbishop Jose Gomez said in a statement that it's an opportunity to embrace the important work of continuing to secure the border, to welcome the stranger and serve the most vulnerable as components of a humane immigration policy. National Migration Week is to be observed until January 14.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.